Krishna wanted you all to have long kirtan tonight. So that's what happened. I'm going to continue where I left off with Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 12 of first canto, where Maharaj Parikshit that sliding door could be opened just a little bit, unless it's really cold. Is it cold back there? That was all, huh? For sake of review, Maharaj Parikshit was born, Jajatakarma ceremony was enacted or taken up by Domya and Kripacharya on behalf of Yudhisthira Maharaj. It's worth repeating so many times because Prabhupada repeated it so many times. Out of the many exalted qualities that were attributed to Maharaj Parikshit, all of which are important for one who was a leader, the most prominent one that Maharaj Yudhisthira was concerned about is, yes, yes, very nice, he has all these nice qualities, but I want to know one thing. Is he going to follow in the footsteps of the previous kings in our lineage? So, apply that message in our Krishna consciousness movement or in our personal lives. Prabhupada used the phrase, we are Rupanugas. Anuga means follower, and Rupa is the one we follow. And anyone following Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu must follow the teachings of Rupa Goswami, and that's what it means to be a good devotee, to be a follower of Rupa Goswami. Because by that act of submission, then one, whatever the endowments that one may have given by God to any one of us, they become properly used. The potency and the purity becomes possible through that submission to Rupa Goswami, which means his teachings and the spirit of his teachings. So after all the nice qualities are described, we heard that Maharaj Yudhisthira was very satisfied. And so in a fitting manner, he lavishly rewarded the vipras who engaged in that activity. And then we heard this distinction, vipra and brahmana. Vipras are particularly known for being very expert in the rituals, and in Vedic times that meant the karma kanda rituals, the material or human necessity side of life. then the brahmanas, being somewhat distinct nomenclature-wise from the vipras, are knowledgeable in the jnana khanda portion of the Vedas, knowledgeable about the soul, Brahman, and above the jnana khanda portion of the Vedas is the upasana khanda portion of the Vedas, where worship according to that particular knowledge, ultimately in the perfect stage of Brahmana is worship of Vishnu, and the perfect stage of Vishnu worship is Shuddha Bhakti. And so Prabhupada placed the Shiromani, the crown jewel of Srimad Bhagavatam, at the top. It's the ripened fruit and the cream of the entire Vedas, as the cream is the richest part of the milk, or as the ripened fruit is the benefit that comes from the tree. So the Bhagavatam is that compared to the tree of Vedic knowledge. And to receive that ripened fruit, one requires a qualified person, a rupanuga, personality. So, then his name was given. His name was given as Parikshit. Based on qualities, the name is given. He was called Parikshit because he was, the English equivalent of that is Ikshite. He was searching for Krishna. He was the examiner. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? His inquisitiveness, searching for Krishna throughout his whole life. And so the relationship between Maharaj Parikshit, having seen the personality God had within the womb, and those that may not see Krishna in the womb, but after they come out of the womb, they may get the impression of the form of the deity, and by that impression then also continue to progress on the path of spiritual life. So that's where we ended up. Here's the last sentence of the purport that we finished. Maharaj Parikshit also advised that such impressions of a godly relation must be impregnated from the beginning of childhood, otherwise one may miss the opportunity of the human form of life, which is very valuable, although it is temporary, like others. That's the where we got up to point. The chapter is nearly completed. The next few verses are describing, it's like a section break. The next section is, and then what happened? What did Maharaj Parikshit do as a young prince growing up in the royal family? What was that like? So here's the description, what that was like. In the poetry of the Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva is using a metaphor. He's using the metaphor of a waxing moon in the fortnight. So the waxing and waning, so from the new moon to the full moon. As the moon gradually grows, so the greatness and glory of Maharaj Parikshit gradually, day after day, developed. So the royal prince, Parikshit, very soon developed luxuriantly, under the care and full facilities of his guardian grandfathers. So, Arjuna was his direct grandfather, but the brothers of Arjuna were like grandfathers also. Just at the same time, King Yudhisthira was considering performing a horse sacrifice to get free from sins incurred from fighting with kinsmen. But he became anxious to get some wealth, for there was no surplus funds. There were no surplus funds outside of fines and tax collection. No wonder government so big on fines. It's money for them. So Prabhupada is making two points in this relation. One is each varna has its means of sustenance or maintenance. So, and they're all service related. The brahmana gives the service. They teach or they perform Vedic practices. And so their means of maintenance is charity. The service of the kshatriya, they give the service of protection. And for those who are protected by them, they offer tribute in the form of taxes or fines. And the third is the vaishya. And the vaishya, their activity is the service of protecting cows. In general, animal husbandry, but specifically protection of cows and producing food grains or krishi goraksha vanijam vaishya karma svabhavajam. So through the means of trade and commerce, that's their maintenance. And the shudras are to be taken care of by the other three. Their necessities are to be provided. So, because the battle had just been fought and the treasury was exhausted, because not only current times, old times, it also, fighting was very costly. When the head of state decides to make battle, it depletes the treasury and causes some problems. No surprise. So the treasury of the royal family was depleted. So to perform a Ashvamedha Yajna, there wasn't the means. Prabhupada specifically says in the purport. Just simply the maintenance of the government was taken care of by the taxes and fines, and so there was no surplus. But they needed, like, not just some surplus, they needed huge surplus. That was one point. Another point is going to be explained further, and that is the nature of a Vaishnav is coming out. The nature of Maharaj Yudhisthira is he was feeling the heaviness of what had just happened. Although he knew it's what Krishna wanted, he knew it was Dharma Yuddha, it was religious fighting, it wasn't something else. And so it had to be done. But even when things have to be done, it happens that some persons become hurt. Prabhupada explains elsewhere in this canto that anytime there's a war, not only the soldiers on the battlefield, but unavoidably, bystanders, innocent people, women and children get hurt or killed. And that's not only unfortunate, it's sinful. And those who are engaged in that activity feel the heaviness, feel the weight of it. Part of the problem of the soldiers that are coming back from this crazy war is, you know, there's enormous trauma having seen what they've had to see, and it just, anyway, the whole is terrible. I know some people that have come back, and it's very difficult. So, Krishna had the answer, and he directed Maharaj Yudhisthira through his brothers to the answer. Understanding the hearty wishes of the king, his brothers, as advised by the infallible Lord Krishna, collected sufficient riches from the north, left by King Maruta. So there's a little bio on King Maruta. Doesn't say the dynasty, but it says that he was king long before Maharaj Yudhisthira was king, and King Maruta had a very qualified brother who was a brahmana of the caliber of Brihaspati. Now note that in Vedic times, the teaching that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita was that according to guna and karma, one was understood to be of a particular varna. Chatur varna maya shrishtam guna karma vibhagashaha. So not all persons born of a Kshatriya father became Kshatriyas, obviously, because Maruta became a Kshatriya and his brother became a Brahmana. We have other examples. Many other examples. One prominent one is Rishabdev, an incarnation, a Shaktivesh avatar of the Lord, had 100 sons. Some of them became Brahmanas. Some of them became kings. Some of them became Mahabhagavatas beyond it, either Brahmana or king. And Prabhupada doesn't fail to point out that according to guna, according to karma, not according to janma. Although Prabhupada explains like this, that if someone is born of a physician, when the boy is small, means the way medical practice was done before, the small boy would help his father select the herbs, get this one, not that one, how to prepare the herbs, how to make the medicine, etc. He would have a good chance, not that automatically, oh, he's a physician, because his father is a physician. Although, good chance, it was favorable, but not a certainty. So when it became that the quality of Kali Yuga was deteriorating, that's where the problem comes. So one who is born into a Brahmana family is disqualified. Just like the son of Shamakrishi was Shringi, and he was the son of a Brahmana, but not qualified. The son of a Brahmana, Dvijabandhu. Anyway, Maruta had a qualified, excellently qualified brother, and who was a priest, Prabhupada writes, who rivaled the capabilities of Brihaspati. So, one of the yajñas that he performed was a very special yajña, a Sankara Yajna. Doesn't describe what that is, and it was so wonderfully done that the Lord was very pleased with him and indicated to him where there was a golden mountain peak. So, Sankara had gold to use in his worship, and he made a whole golden throne and all golden utensils. And he was a very much appreciated, qualified Brahmin. When he was to leave this world, he requested Brihaspati to take his duties. Brihaspati rejected that offer, said, oh, I'll stay in the heavenly planets, thank you. So, he finally found some person to take over that service. And so King Maruta, the brother, had this fabulous opulence for his kingdom. And he would regularly have the brahmanas perform yajñas, and when the brahmanas were performed, the yajñas performed, the brahmanas were given gold and golden plates to eat from. Prabhupada doesn't go into it here, but he would speak about this in lectures. Say, people today are saying advanced civilization, but just see it. At the time of King Maruta, they had golden plates. So what do they have today? Ceramic plates, plastic plates, paper plates, styrofoam plates. And the ceramic plates they use again and again. But according to Vedic perspective, a ceramic plate or a clay-based utensil, once used, it's contaminated, you throw it away. You don't use it again and again. Anyway, advancement of civilization. So at this time, the brahmanas, they were so satisfied that after they used their golden plate, they threw it. Like, you know, you take your leaf plate in India. In Mayapur, we serve the GBC prasad on leaf plates, and when we're done, we take the leaf plate, roll it up, and put it in the dustbin. So, you know, imagine if it's golden plates. Finish it up and throw it in the dustbin. That's what the brahmanas did. And Prabhupada comments here, they left it by the side of the road. They were so detached. And it stayed there for generations and generations. He specifically comments, it's not that the brahmanas or the people went along and thought, oh, this would make a nice item to take to a pawn shop and then use for enterprise and build some business. They didn't think like that then. Now they would be gone before it blinked. But this is his point, is this is how satisfied people were and how careful that they were about not taking the property of someone else, because that which doesn't belong to you is the property of someone else. So if you go along and you see something that, hey, no one is claiming it. It all of a sudden becomes yours. And that's not Vedic times in any case. So Krishna informed the brothers, I know where there's wealth. You go to this place where King Maruta had his palace, and there's heaps and piles of gold. And it's okay if you take that discarded gold, purify it, and use it for a yajna. So they did. And not only they did a yajna, they did three. Because to perform an Ashvamedha yajna, Prabhupada, I never heard him give the details of how much wealth, but mountains of wealth, and mountains of ghee, mountains of grain, enormous amount of wealth. Not practically possible in this age. Then he makes the point that the success, very important point, the success of any yajna depends upon the qualification of the priest in charge. If there's a qualified priest, then you'll get a good result. And if you don't have a qualified priest, you'll get no result. Or worse. Like Tvashta, he was a qualified priest, very qualified priest. But he made one mistake. One mistake. And so the opposite of what was to happen happened. You better not make any mistakes. And that's one of the reasons why, not only lack of qualified priests, but this particular point. One mistake, the whole thing is nullified. Like when we had our installation of the Krishna Balaram deities, the Goswamis of Vrindavan were invited. to perform the yajna. Prabhupada explained internally that the reason was, if someone else besides them performed the yajna, they would have said, oh, it was done wrong. And so they did it. Oh, it was done right. So then they would accept that the installation of the deity was done right, and they honor it. So it was very elaborate. Something different, but very very much like the deity installation of the Panchatattva in Mayapur. Some of you may have attended that, or at least seen videos of it. So the installation of Krishna Balaram was a real event. And the temple, those of you who have been to Vrindavan, there's the upper raised area where the altars are, and then there's that down steps and then the sunken area. So in that sunken area, they built the platform, you know, with exactly facing in the different directions, and the red flag over here and the yellow flag over there, and of a certain height, and all according to Vedic rule. And then there's three kinds of priests plus a referee. And the referee was very busy. And I was watching for some time. The procedure is, if the referee, you know, says time out and blows the whistle, then they have to go back to where there's just some discrepancy. So all the different categories of priests have to be, they just go back and do it again, because if there's one mistake, there's no effect. It has to be done exactly right. So, he's got a dhoti on. Cool. Okay. While the kirtan was going, while the yajna was going on for 3 days, that was 24-hour kirtan. And Prabhupada was explaining the real purification was the chanting of the holy name. The other was nice. I was commenting like this once in Vishakha. Mataji said, oh, I thought it was very wonderful. I was just kind of a on the side person. I'm thinking they're arguing all the time. Every 5 minutes they're arguing over some detail. How can this come out right? Anyway, the outcome of any sacrifice depends upon the qualification of the priest. They're not only they chant the mantras and do all the procedures and everything is clean and of, you know, proper quality, their consciousness has to be elevated. And Prabhupada makes the point, in this age of Kali, such priests are not available. No domyas, no kripacharyas, no samvarta, that's the brother of Maruta. So we have Sankirtan. So when we have our ceremonial functions, it's the Sankirtan. We have the mantras and the fire arena and so on, but the chanting is the essence, and even the chanting of auspicious prayers. There can be many different auspicious prayers, but Prabhupada gave us this Brahma Samhita or Mangala Charana, and invoking the names of the pure devotees of the Lord and the members of the disciplic succession and so forth. The presiding deities of Sambandha, Abhidei, and Prayojana, and Panchatattva, and Srimati Radharani. And so it's invoking the topmost form of auspiciousness to make that yajna successful. Then um, I'll read a little bit from the next verse in Purport. We'll end. Okay. By those riches, the king could procure the ingredients for 3 horse sacrifices. Thus, the pious King Yudhisthira, who is very fearful after the battle of Kurukshetra, pleased Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. The first part of the purport, he describes why he was necessary. There was no, the treasury was empty. So he had to have the yajñas. And what was the purpose of the yajña? He was feeling this Vaishnava emotion that so much suffering. And for what reason? For me. So many people have been hurt or killed, and those that are minus their protectors, the women or children, all those same reasons that Arjuna was thinking. Oh, this is very bad. So this is now after the fact, it's similar mood, it's very bad. So to invoke auspiciousness and atone. Now, I spoke about this same message this morning, and I had much more time than I do now, so I'll just do a synopsis. There's a theological question that any religion will address: what to do about inadvertent, unavoidable, in the execution of duty, even good people make mistakes, reactions to mistakes, or sins incurred from just living. What to do about the accumulation of sins? And when you think about it for about a half a minute, there's different answers to that question, and those different answers make up different theologies. Because one thing is, you know, how, just simply, you know, non-religious, just how to enjoy, that, like, you know, how to be an animal. But those that aren't just animals, but look towards God, that's where this question comes. There's things that are enjoined by God not to be done, and inadvertently we may do some of those things. So what's to be done to protect? So that question is addressed in detail in the 6th canto of the Bhagavatam, and just making it very, very short. The question comes from Maharaj Prikshit after hearing about the hellish planets in the 5th canto of the Bhagavatam. The 5th canto of the Bhagavatam, part of it is the structure of the universe. Part of the structure of the universe is this very mystical language about the orbits of the planets and their size and their diameters and their how many yojanas there's in circumference and their orbits and distance from one to another and so many things. And Bhumandala and all the different terminologies. So the middle planetary, upper, then the lower planetary regions. And hearing the lower planetary regions and the types of suffering that those who are sinful have to endure. The 5th canto ends and the 6th canto begins with Maharaj Prikshit saying, oh my God, so much suffering. What can be done to prevent persons from having to undergo all that terrible suffering? Is there something that can be done? And Shukadeva Goswami says 2 things. Just see your quality. You're about to die and you're worried about the welfare of other people. You are a great soul. And the answer is yes, there is something, because even those that are following the codes of the Vedas, it inadvertently will make some mistakes, therefore there's, in addition to the thing that is to be done, there's a side-by-side arrangement for prayaschitta, for atonement, for mistakes. I'll do it quickly, there's more detail, but Maharaj Parikshit then presents a question. By the way, this is to teach us, what do you do when you're hearing something and it seems to you that there's a discrepancy in what you hear? You don't turn the intelligence off, you leave the intelligence on, and you present in the form of a question, or, you know, I have this doubt, just as Arjuna did. Submission doesn't mean blind. Submission includes being thoughtful, and when you're thoughtful, you hear something that to you sounds like a discrepancy, you should ask. Like Arjuna said, over here you said something, and over here you said something else that it seems contradictory. Can you explain? First you said, intelligence is better than fruitive work. Yes, intelligence is better than fruitive work. And now you're asking me to engage in fruitive work. This, in fact, it's ghastly work. Avaram gore. Horrible. My dear Krishna, I have this doubt. I can't understand why you're doing that. Because he didn't understand the difference between devotional service and fruitive work. Like a lot of people don't understand the difference between devotional service and fruitive work. They think if I'm going to do devotional service, I have to quit my job and move into the ashram, shape, you know, become a sannyasi. But these parents think their kids are thinking like that. So they don't want to, you know, don't get too involved with this thing. So, what is devotional service? Many people say it bigger. Most people don't understand it. Although it's right in Bhagavad Gita. In fact, it's such an important question that people don't get. Arjuna asks it three times. Beginning of chapter 5, beginning of chapter 3, beginning of chapter 12. He asks it three times. So, Maharaj Yudhisthira is wanting to perform this particular form of sacrifice, not only to relieve himself, but also the kingdom from the reaction, because the misdeeds of the king go also to the citizens, and the misdeeds of the citizens go also to the king. Or the other way, the piety of the king goes to the citizens. If the citizens are led by a pious king, then it's prosperity. And if they're led by an impious king, it's the opposite. So he's concerned about the welfare of the citizens, not his own backside. So he wants to do this yajna. Prabhupada writes in the purport, one should take lessons from the acts of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was afraid of sins committed on the battlefield, and therefore he wanted to satisfy the supreme authority. This indicates that unintentional sins are also committed in our daily occupational discharge of duties. And to counteract even such unintentional crimes, and he uses the word three times, crimes, one must perform sacrifices as they are recommended in the revealed scriptures. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, yagnartat karma no nyatra lokayam karma bandhanaha, that one must perform sacrifices recommended in the scriptures in order to get rid of commitments of all unauthorized work or even unintentional crimes which we are apt to commit. By doing so, one should be freed of all kinds of sins, and those who do not do so, but work for self-interest or sense gratification, have to undergo all tribulations accrued from committed sins. Therefore, the main purpose of performing sacrifices is the Satisfy the Supreme Personality, Hari. The process of performing sacrifices may be different in terms of different times, places, and persons, but the aim of such sacrifices is one and the same at all times and in all circumstances. Namely, satisfaction of the Supreme Lord Hari. Why Hari? Because he takes away everything inauspicious. And with as many hands as he takes away, he gives everything auspicious. So we don't even need to, like, you know, please take away the inauspicious. We just need to please the Supreme Lord Hari. That is the way of pious life, and that is the way of peace and prosperity in the world at large. Maharaj Yudhisthira did all these as the ideal pious king of the world. A question. Horse sacrifice? Maharaj Yudhisthira? He's a devotee. Why is he doing a horse sacrifice? Should we do horse sacrifices? If we had the wealth and qualified brahmanas, should we do horse sacrifices? Why did he do a horse sacrifice? Three of them. Anyone have any answer? Why did the gopis worship goddess Katyayani? To get Krishna as their husband. Why? You know, why not Lord Narayan? Why an extra devotion? In the 64 items of devotional service, one of those items that we don't do, but it's there, is worship of Ganesh. Right? That's the devotion, readers? Or, in the case of Maharaj Ambarish, those who have read that section of the Bhagavatam, or are familiar with it a little bit, he was a Shuddha Bhakta. It was a different yuga, but he also had a deity of Krishna, and he worshipped a deity of Krishna in his altar every morning. And it was a fantastic altar. It was a Maharaj Ambarish standard altar. He did his worship from early in the morning until 11 o'clock before he even went into the royal assembly. And everything went fine before he got there. It wasn't like there was chaos. It wasn't, you know, fiddling while Rome was burning. He was... Because he was so qualified. But then in that chapter it describes that there was a famine, there was a drought in one part of his kingdom. Prabhupada indicates, based upon the rivers mentioned, that may have been Rajasthan. So, there was drought in some part of his kingdom. What did he do? He engaged the ritualistic brahmanas and performing the yajna so they could have rain in that drought-infested place. Why not worship Krishna? Who has the answer? Brave soul.
I'm guessing it's it to set proper example for various people to follow their prescribed duties. Even though he was on a transcendental platform.
Okay. Any other thoughts on this one? Yes?
Guruji, is it to provide various opportunities for service according to psychophysical natures of people?
And faith, according to an individual's faith. Now, that's specifically what Yudhisthira Maharaj did, and what... Maharaj Ambarish did, which is somewhat, was certainly different than the um, the position of those who are on the platform of Shuddha Bhakti, like the gopis, their worship was not of the demigoddess Katyayani. Their worship was of the internal potency, our acharyas describe, because that's the platform of devotional service that they were on. So there's the world, the controller of worldly energies, and there's the prototype, the internal potency of those manifestations. And the gopis had no interest in anything material. They had interest in only Krishna, which was their qualification of having no interest in anything material. Same with this explanation of why in the 64 items it's for very elevated souls. The worship of Ganesh is not seeing him as the removal of obstacles for achieving some material purpose, but for the purpose of achieving bhakti. As we read in Sri Brahma Samhita, the potency of Ganesh for removal of obstacles comes from the Supreme Lord. And so the Vaishnava principle can go to that prototype, or, you know, to Ganesh without having material desires fulfilled, but having the desires for obstacles in achieving the goal of bhakti removed. So Prabhupada was asked, why didn't you teach that? It's in the Nectar of Devotion. Prabhupada said, you don't have the qualification. If you were to worship Ganesh, you would have material desires. And you get material desires fulfilled that would implicate you further in the tanglements of material existence. So I haven't given that to you. You worship Lord Nrisimhadev. So after our arti, every arti that we perform in temples at least, there's the worship of Lord Nrisimhadev. If there were some mistakes in the course of our seva parads, they're by the mercy of Lord Nrisimhadev, they're removed. If the prayer isn't, you know, please take care of the mistakes I made, the prayer is, we're worshipping Lord Nrisimhadev. So, what is the purpose? To satisfy the Supreme Lord Hari. So the direct method Prabhupada has given us. The other day I mentioned Lochan Das Thakur's Chaitanya Mangala. In the invocation verses of Chaitanya Mangala, as per the teachings of Rupa Goswami, he offers prayers to Ganesh that may the obstacle of in my path of properly glorifying Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu be removed. It's a purely devotional prayer, because there was nothing in his heart but that. So we have other things in our heart but that. So we approach differently. And one other point is, those that know the purpose behind these things, not only they're engaging persons according to their psychophysical nature and their faith, but they know the purpose behind these things. And so there's a different potency involved. Or to say it, same thing differently, in I just spent the Thanksgiving holiday in Seattle speaking on Harinam Chintamani, and there's several chapters, four chapters, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses the relationship between performance of duty and with the performance of duty, the rituals that are connected with that worldly duty, and how that, if properly done under the guidance of a qualified brahmana, can bring one in touch with their innate faith, and through the association of devotees come to the stage of bhakti. That's what it's intended for. But without the qualified brahmanas, the whole thing doesn't go there. Therefore, it's not recommended. But why is it recommended if the brahmanas are qualified? You go from the Vipras to the Brahmanas to the Vaishnavas to the Shuddha Bhaktas. Then it's effective. So, as practicing Vaishnavas, it's not that we trash all those ideas of duties, but we certainly must join those, whatever the sense of duty that we have, given from the scriptures and by our qualified acharyas, joined with the chanting of the holy name. And that other process before Kali Yuga, where the chanting of the holy name is the principal means of achieving spiritual perfection, these other things had their place for gradual elevation, just as Prabhupada is speaking of specifically. The tree of Vedic knowledge is complete, material and spiritual. So the material side of our lives as practicing devotees should be in properly situated and guided. And the spiritual side must also be properly situated and guided. And you neglect one without the qualification. I mean, we can't imitate Gaurakishore Das Babaji or Jagannath Das Babaji or Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and take a vow, I'll chant 3 billion names and just do that for 10 years. We don't have the qualification. You should not imitate those persons. So because we don't have that qualification, we have duties that are somewhat different than that. And according to our psychophysical nature and faith, but if we have other duties, but if properly guided, then we can progress. Just like chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita, if you can't do this, do this, if you can't do this, do this, you can't do this. So at this level, you can do. Because if done properly, under proper guidance, you can come to the next stage. That's the idea. Okay. 9:15. Any discussion?
What are these horse sacrifice? Is it supposed to be the same thing as Ashwamedha Yajna?
It's just Sanskrit way and the English way of saying the same thing.
But do they really sacrifice the horse?
The horse goes in old and comes out young. Proving the quality of the Brahmana. If the horse goes in old and comes out cooked, he's got a big reaction to deal with.
Did that ever happen, Mark?
I haven't done a study. It's not recommended. I was sharing this with Pritrushava. When I first started coming to Chicago to hang out with Pritrushava and go visit colleges, because he's just always been absorbed like that. One of those early visits, I recall in one of the suburban mandirs, I don't know which one, they were having, big advertisements in the paper, we're going to have an Ashwamedha Yajna for the whole of North America. We need gobs of money so we can have this big Ashwamedha Yajna for all these poor people. It's just a show, and a name and blah, 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 and just involving people in, abominable activity that they don't have the qualification to do. So, I don't know what happened. I don't know if they got as far as doing it, what to speak of what happened to the horse. Hare Krishna. Yes?
Maharaj, would it be appropriate to extrapolate what Maharaj Yudhishthira did in terms of performing these sacrifices to the way Lord Indra performed the Ashwamedha Yajna in terms of engaging people in different services?
No. Because Indra is not on the platform of devotion. He did because he had fruit of interest. Etc. He's a mixed devotee. He's a devotee, but he's a mixed devotee. He's not on the platform of Maharaj Yudhishthira.
as part of an inspiration from Krishna Smaranaka and also Bada Haridas Prabhu.
Quite a duet.
Bada Haridas Prabhu?
No, those two names.
And I had the inspiration that the, and you spoke about the Sankirtan Yajna being a sacrifice. And so, I mean, in the material or karma kanda type of sacrifices, the success of the sacrifice depends on the qualification of the person performing it. And also in a certain level of verb, you know, the person who's chanting or whatever also affects people differently. But kind of as an exercise for myself, I'm today, especially since we've chanted for so long, I was trying to see how I could appreciate devotees who are doing the sacrifice and to contribute to it and all of that. So what's the proper way to engage in that? Because it can be anybody who's chanting, and it may be somebody exalted, it may be me, or, you know, whomever. So what's the proper way to see ourselves as contributing to that and participating in it?
Two things. It's service together. So the very fact that's being done is pleasing to the personality of Godhead. And it's a natural way to serve together, associate together. Pleasing to the personality of Godhead, regardless of, you know, in this kind of an assembly. But the other point is, the injunction specifically is to not hear from the non-devotee, because it can become poisonous. Like milk, which is a nice, nutritious substance when touched by the lips of a serpent. So the poison of the serpent can go into the milk and it has a poisonous effect. For example, in the yoga circuit, there's a lot of people who are chanting the holy name that are impersonalists. I mean, covert and some overt. And some are just animals. I won't go into detail, but some of them are animals. Their behavior is animals. And it's, you know, it's a living for them. And that's to be avoided. But it's more along those lines than you as a participant in a Sankirtan getting out your purity barometer and saying, oh, this one's very pure. I like to listen to this one. Then you're setting yourself up for making Vaishnava aparad. So it's nice to appreciate the quality of the devotee's devotion, not just the musical skill. The quality of devotion. But from practical experience, Prabhupada engaged people in chanting that liked chanting. Even he knew that their consciousness may not be so pure. He engaged them in chanting because it was their means of purification. And so we should appreciate like that, not like, oh, here comes this person who is not so pure, but they're chanting because they like it. That's their means of purification, so I'm going to go in the next room until that's over. I mean, that's offensive. We participate wholeheartedly in a way that Krishna is pleased. That's how we participate. We may have some particularly like, I have some particular liking for Badahari's kirtan. It's just heart melting. I'm not going to go into the barometer program. Is this? You follow?
Can I add?
Yeah.
I was thinking particularly because I as kind of an exercise for my own humility, cultivation, just like trying to see how I can contribute to, you know, a service that someone else is trying to do. So just seeing if that's a proper endeavor for me.
I'm not sure what your question is.
The question is if that's a proper...
Is which a proper? Yes. Contribute to someone who's doing some service is always proper. That's a nice... servant of the servant. That's always proper. In the back, I see a hand. I hear a voice. It's Donna Kelly.
Mentioned from the sixth canto,
yes,
of Pritchett Maharaj inquiring about what to do about sin and being given the answer that there's Christ to their atonement to do. But then he...
Yeah, I didn't complete it, did I?
So he was dissatisfied with that. And
yes, he
so
was.
So he heard the explanation that
Shuddha Bhakti.
We should be purified the heart because sins will just keep repeating.
Yes, I did.
So I didn't completely understand then the explanation about Yudhishthira Maharaj doing the Ashwamedha Yajna for the purpose of atonement. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think I misunderstood maybe, that it sounded like you were saying that he decided to perform an atonement yajna because...
No. I meant to say that I didn't... thank you for... I was just trying to, you know, finish because we're already starting so late. And, okay. Maharaj Yudhisthira is on the platform like Lochan Das Thakur, who is praying. Praying to, thank you. Vinash, to please remove obstacles so I can properly glorify. So he was capable of taking that which is normally done for a karmakanda purpose to a higher platform because of his higher because of his Krishna consciousness. Now, we're not being therefore recommended to do like that, but he was doing like that. It was appropriate for his time to be an example-setting person to do like that, and had the qualified priest to do like that. And his consciousness was that Krishna is to be pleased. Not his consciousness was simply, I want to reduce Prarabdha karma. It wasn't just a karmakanda ritual that he was doing to get rid of Prarabdha karma. And the qualification, to, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes, to take something that's on a lower platform, seeing the higher purpose for it, that Krishna is to be pleased. Now, that was appropriate for the time. He was engaging the qualified priests to do that, which we don't have even the capacity to make that choice. For a number of reasons, one of which we don't have the qualified priests, nor are we qualified, as Maharaj Yudhisthira is qualified. It's a non-option for us. We should not imitate. So for us, the process, the sacrifice is sankirtan, and we may offer our prescribed duties, the worldly part of our life, unto Krishna to our best capacity, knowing that there'll be some mistakes. And what do? We don't chant to neutralize the sins, we chant to become pure. That's the injunction for us. Because if we chant with the mentality that it's okay, I make mistakes, I'm going to chant and I'll neutralize the sins, and that's an offense against the holy name. So we have to check that mentality and simply strive for pleasing the personality of Godhead. I'll accept the reactions of my mistakes. I want to please serve the personality of Godhead in a pleasing way, although I don't even have the capacity to do so. So it's the hope against hope. By the mercy of disciplic succession, I can offer something, and by their purity, it can be offered to Krishna. That's the application for us. So in Maharaj Yudhisthira's case, it was the other. He had the qualification. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that Maharaj Yudhisthira was feeling that on his account, so many soldiers were killed, and his women and children were unprotected, and that was a Vaishnava quality. And I'm not able to understand, like, maybe there's a natural human tendency to think like that also, perhaps?
Yes, but elevate it. Take something that's natural human and elevate it. So, like, take something that's natural human. You're hungry. Or there's sex desire. Take something that's natural and, you know, comes from the body. Now, how do you elevate it? Not just do it religiously, but how do you elevate it to a transcendental platform? But that's what we're hearing. He had that natural sentiment, but it was this, you know, the soft-heartedness of a Vaishnav. So he wanted to take the proper action. Take action. He could have thought so many things. I'm the king. I won. They lost. That's life. Or he could have thought, which would have also been transcendental way. Just as Krishna says to Arjuna, in the course of action, there's sometimes destruction. It's unavoidable. Krishna wanted the battle. I didn't go off and just, you know, go bashing a bunch of people. It was something Krishna wanted. I wanted to avoid it. I was very reluctant, but Krishna and the brahmanas, and so I, you know, I'm okay. But he was. You can go the other side and say there's a fault. Krishna wanted it. What's the problem? Krishna wanted it. There's nothing there. You weren't acting in a self-motivated way. So just so sometimes, like in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada speaks, you know, this was illusion for Arjuna. And sometimes he speaks, this was the good quality of Arjuna. Now, your particular question is, there may be some, you know, it's just a human, so it's a mode of goodness, not just human, because it can be the other thing too. It's human that just, you know, look how people live. You call it human. Life is just, you know, expendable. So the finer sentiments go more towards at least the mode of goodness and ultimately a Vaishnava disposition. So he's exhibiting this elevated character of a Vaishnava and then taking some action because he's a great soul. Yes.
Mm-hmm. In the scriptures, about animal sacrifice, they say that even Daksha offered, he invited exalted personality to his yagyas, and they will offer their share of this sacrificed animal. So some commentaries I've heard in...
Careful.
Some opinion and commentaries...
Careful.
Well, some opinion is that they... encourage meat eating, number one. In Atharva Veda it says that the reason it was done is to show your opulence, that you send this horse, you say you are opulent, anybody touches it, I'm going to kill him or whatever, you know, you are my enemy. And at the same time, this horse, when it comes back, they will do the mantras in such a way that this horse will be liberated. So, at the conscious platform, the liberation is guaranteed. But on the material platform, they were given that I'm most opulent.
I have a recommendation for you. I have two recommendations for you. One of them is, all of that which you have read from other commentaries, hit the delete button. Because if you spend your time and energy to how does that match up with pure devotional service, you'll have a lifetime's work that will never be finished, many lifetimes' work that will be not finished. Birth after birth, an endless task that will not be finished. So my advice is, you know, take all those files and just hit the delete button.
It's actually a newspaper.
Okay, whatever it was. Take that information, hit the delete button. Don't read such things, and then, you know, how does this match with that? That's, you know, that's mental speculation, fruitless, endless activity. Rather, it's far simpler and factual that unless something is coming into cyclic succession, guaranteed, it's, put it in nice words and say, flawed. Put it in more bold words and say, you know, not worth your time spending with that. It's contaminating. It's just spin your mind with people who are, that's the program, they're mind spinners. They spin theirs and then they spin other people's. It'll drain your devotion. Don't do that. So many things. Unlimited so many things. Endless so many, lifetime after lifetime so many things with no end, no conclusion. As they say, been there, done that. No thanks. But the position of devotion is, okay, now how do we look at the Daksha Yajna? And you open the Bhagavatam and you read Daksha Yajna. And you get the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Jiva Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and all the great acharyas, and you get a very clear, uncontaminated, unspun out, clear explanation. Maybe I don't even need to say the second one. That was good enough. I'll say the second one. Through karma khanda ritual, it is not possible to give liberation. Somebody that says the horse becomes liberated, fill in the blank. Bunch of garbage. Not so. By karma khanda, one cannot achieve liberation. Not so. Now, is the horse benefited? Sure. If the priest is qualified. Etc. Anything else? Yes?
You said Yudhishthir, you know, Krishna demanded the war. He asked them to kill, asked them to go to the Kurukshetra battle to kill their people. You know, and Yudhishthir acted accordingly. Then why is the question of sacrifice? You know, when he did everything for Krishna, where is the question of sacrifice?
So let me ask you a question. If you perform arti, why do you bother singing the Sringa prayers?
Protection.
Huh? Protection. Ah. Because there may have been some mistake, and Lord Sringa Dev will give you protection. So he did everything. But there may have been some mistake, so he wants protection. He's a devotee. He wants Krishna's protection. Then you say it again. You're going to say, yeah, but Krishna wanted and he did, and so there was his protection. But he's a devotee. Once he may have made some mistake. In the specific mistakes he's pointing to. They're unavoidable in the course of action. There's some destruction. Walk across the floor. So it doesn't mean, okay, I'm a devotee, I don't have to worry about destruction. I've got Krishna's protection. Look out, here I come. That's not the mentality of a Vaishnava. As it's part of our, if we're doing the arti properly, part of the arti is the Nrisinga prayers afterwards. If you're performing your prescribed duty, one of the things that comes afterwards is these sacrifices. Is that all right? All right. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that in general we're not qualified to perform karmakanda activities at a platform of devotional service, but
can I edit that a little bit? It's like our goal is not to become qualified to perform karmakanda activities at the platform of devotional service. That's not our goal. Go ahead.
Well, I guess my question was, especially as a neophyte devotee, if presented with an opportunity to perform karmakanda activities...
Ah, that's where we were headed. So yadyaracharajitrestas. Show me in the teachings of Rupa Goswami where that's what we're enjoined to do. And if it's not there, we don't do it. Isn't it simple?
Not specifically for me, but for
I'm saying, okay.
To satisfy my parents especially, let's say.
Okay, this question came up in the other morning discussion also. The yeah but question. My parents tell me, very nice, you chant Hare Krishna. Yes, but you should also do these other rituals that we do because it's nice that you do them. So should I do them? Is that what you're asking?
Well, something I can't like satisfy them, but what should my mood or behavior be? What is the proper way? If at all,
it all depends on the details. Depends on them, it depends on you, it depends on the circumstance. It could be a whole range of things that you could do. Depends on the circumstance. You want the range? You know, at this end and at that end and in the middle? In some circumstance, you can enter into a, let's say just, you know, go to a temple. You can go to a temple with a prayer in your heart to that deva or devi understanding, you know, from the verses of Brahma Samhita. This person is a servant of Govinda. And I want to offer my respects to Govinda. You know, I'm not going to say that to my family members, but I'm going to say that strongly in my heart. Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham. And you learn the verses and recite the verses and pray like that. This is a devotee of Govinda. And I'm offering my respects to a devotee of Govinda. For example. Now the problem is, the atmosphere is something else. The priest is, you know, literally worshipping as a god or goddess without consideration. And the whole atmosphere is like that. The mode of nature is altogether different. And it's not transcendental. So it's challenging. So it depends on the circumstance. On, you know, the family member and so many things. You could try, depending upon the family member. This is in the case of Ramchandra Kaviraj. His father, Chiranjiva, was a topmost stage, Uttam Adhikar Vaishnava, the Mahabhagavata Vaishnava, and he left this world. His mother was the daughter of a Shakta. So growing up, he became familiar with all of that. So when he became again a Vaishnava, his Shakta friends were challenging him. Why don't you worship like you used to worship? And he explained, you know, the Siddhanta. So, by worshipping Krishna, that's worshipping everyone and everything. Why don't you simply worship Krishna? Come, let's go worship Krishna. If they have a capacity, that's better. And there's things in between. It depends on the circumstance, the details, and the faith that they have, and the relationship that you have with them, and so many things. Yes?
Mother, I have a question. Maybe this is a valid question, but I'm sorry.
We'll find out.
I get to what you mentioned earlier about the chanting and hearing. So how do you find who is the real devotee and what is the right association for you?
Well, that's a simple question. There are several places in you've read Bhagavad Gita, right? Okay. In Bhagavad Gita, that question is asked about four times by Arjuna in different ways. By what symptoms? Is one who is a self-realized soul? What's the symptoms of one who has transcended the modes of nature? So, symptoms. So, a core starting point has to do with hearing in disciplic succession, just like this, you know, reading in the newspaper something. If it's not disciplic succession, you don't need to read it. Just, it's a waste of time. So, there's a starting point. Now, one who is in disciplic succession, then you can look at other things. Like, is the message that's being spoken consistent with the message of disciplic succession? And is the behavior consistent with the message? For example, is the mood of those behaviors in the humble mood of service consistently or inconsistent or what? You know, etc. You just... Does that help? Simple? Another very important item is sincerity. Seeing the quality of sincerity. Supposing somebody is rather new in devotional service, so they may not be so conversant in the teachings and so on and so on, but their quality of sincerity is outstanding. So that's an important consideration as far as, you know, the question you raised. They may not be able to, in terms of the scripture, answer all questions. But that's good association. Yeah? Back in the corner? Yes. Okay, the kid screaming is a little louder than your voice. Proper guidance what?
For both material and spiritual life.
Ah, for both material and spiritual life is important.
And my concern was that pure devotees will give such kind of training. They already know that there are certain souls who won't make it in this lifetime.
They know that there are certain souls who will what?
Won't make it in this lifetime.
Won't make it in this lifetime.
A lot of, you know, it's it's like when they get into or when they're introduced to this pure emotional service, they realize what they've missed, but it's again, they can't really give in to it completely. So why is there so much of, you know, still effort being put into that person? Maybe they should just be left to, you know?
Okay. You can do that, and those that want to continue giving effort, they can continue giving effort, right?
I think it's a waste of time.
Okay. And there's others that don't. I've not... Let's say, you know, when Prabhupada came to the West, and he saw the condition. He could have said what you just said. But he had a mission. He could have said it's a waste of time, these people are... But that's not what he said. He said, you know, I have some service to execute. And you brought me here. So please give me the capacity to speak this message so it will be understood. Now, Prabhupada, you know, you made a statement at the very beginning that an elevated person will know who's going to make it and who's not going to make it. So why waste time with persons that are not going to make it? The whether that's true or not, that the disposition of compassion is let me help someone go as far as they can go. And by that act of compassion, that's a permanent asset to that person. And in their next life, they begin where they left off, and then they can go further. Now, in support of what you said, certainly, Prabhupada would use this example in reference to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He, as a gardener, he would plant his seeds where the soil was fertile, not where it was not fertile or desert. Still, like he went to the city of Mayavadis. And he made this declaration, I've come with all of my merchandise and no one is buying. So I have to give it away freely. For no price. Whereas Lord Nityananda, the instruction for Lord Nityananda is this song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the price is faith. But where there's no faith, but even a little faith. Take the holy name. So, now, how to measure how much faith, even if it's a little faith, as opposed to, you know, go back to Godhead faith. They should receive the holy name. That's the mercy of a Vaishnava. Or Vasudev Datta, in the extreme case. If they cannot and receive this gift that you came to give because of there's too many sinful reactions, and I offer this prayer to you, please transfer all those reactions to me. Now, we don't have this capacity, so don't put yourself in Vasudev Dutt's sandals. But the principle is, if there's some merit, the compassionate person will say, transfer that merit to these unfortunate persons. That's a Vaishnava compassion. Like Ambarish Maharaj, when Durvas Muni was being pursued by the Sudarshan Chakra, he prayed to Sudarshan Chakra, many nice prayers, but the end was, if there's any piety that's come to me from all of the austerities and sacrifices and activities I've done, I hereby transfer all of that to this person who tried to kill me Durvas Muni, so that that will protect him. It's a Vaishnava compassion. Yes, we make distinction between receptive, not receptive. But we don't abandon, you know, just discard so easily because oh, they're not going to make it in this lifetime, leave them behind. It's a Vaishnava compassion to extend. Within reason, but extend. Were it not so, many of us in this room would be left behind. But fortunately, we're the objects of compassion of nice Vaishnavas. What do you think?
I think it's too much.
Okay, I think we should end. It's almost 10 o'clock. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gopinanam ki jai,
Adhurinash Rupad Maharaj ki jai,
Chicago weather ki jai.